Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm your host, Henry Arslanian, and welcome to this episode of the Future Money Podcast. My goal with this podcast is very simple. It's to go deep in some of the biggest ideas, trends, and developments we are seeing in the field of crypto, and hopefully empower you with this information, and then let you make your own decision on what their impact can be on the future of money and the future of finance. I want to say a big thank you to you all, to all your loyal listeners from over 160 different countries. This podcast, The Future of Money, is now in the top 5% of all podcasts globally on Spotify. Really, thank you to the over 500,000 of you who follow my content each week. Really, this would never be possible without the support and really the encouragements of each one of you. So massive thank you. Today, it's going to be a very interesting episode. We're really going to talk about a new report from our partners in this episode, Chainalysis, with their latest report called the Geography of Cryptocurrency Report, really analyzing some of the regions of the world where we're seeing crypto activity, trying to understand what is driving it, and try to understand really where the next wave of Web3 innovation and cryptocurrency developments, where it can come from. And to do this, today we're very honored to have, for a second time on the show, Kim Grauer, who's a director of research at Chainalysis. One thing about Kim you may not know is not only she loves surfing and scuba diving and sailing, but she's about to go on a 15 miles solo hike in the northeast of the US. So Kim, great to have you with us, and thanks for being with us before you go on this big hike.
Thanks for having me. I feel like now that I've told you, I really have to do it now.
There's accountability in crypto, and this now you gotta really have to do it. Krim, great to have you with us. And I guess as part of our regular disclosures, Chainalysis is a partner on this show for this episode. And Chainalysis may be working with some other previous or current sponsors of the show that we have on the future of money as well. And of course, nothing we mention on this podcast should be seen or should be constructed or perceived as investment advice. It's really here for information purposes. Krim, let's jump right in. There's a lot of topics I want to talk about, from what's happening in LATAM and Asia and Africa. But before we start, can you give a quick background on yourself the role, what you do at Chainalysis, and then also share a bit about the background of this report?
I'm Kim, and I'm director of research at Chainalysis. I've been at Chainalysis for over 6 years. I was an early employee, and so I've got to witness every single kind of major growth and retraction phase of the crypto markets of the past 6 or 7 years. And I have always, in that entire time that I've been working at Chainalysis, been in charge of all things research and what can we learn from our data to help inform us about trends in the ecosystem, and then surface those insights to the people who really need to know about them. And that involves putting free reports in the public domain on the amount of crime happening, because we're fighting, I don't know if you know this, there's a lot of stigma around cryptocurrency, and there's a lot of preconceptions and preconceived notions around what it's used for and who are the major users of cryptocurrency. And we have a philosophy that the best way to fight that is with data, and transparent data and neutral data and long, long, long 100 plus page reports. What you're seeing, the Geography of Cryptocurrency Report, is probably our second biggest report. And it's an effort to help people understand that crypto is used all around the world. And maybe you're in a bubble or everyone's kind of in a bubble, but maybe you're only restricted to understanding that crypto is the way crypto is impacting you in your inner circle. But in reality, there's people all around the world who use cryptocurrency. We have meaningful adoption. We have meaningful signals in almost every single country around the world of crypto activity. And so we want to bring that to life, talk about stories of how people are using crypto around the world, put as much data as possible. There's a lot of data to solve this. And then we put it all in this report.
That's interesting. I have to say, some of the reports you guys publish, from the crypto crime one to this one, I find it actually very, very interesting indeed. So let's dive right in, Kim. When you look at the report holistically, what are some of the big trends you've seen at the global level with this latest edition of the report? And then I want to dive into some of the regions and some of the insights we've seen from there.
So the first big takeaway is that countries in Central Southern Asia are at the top of the index, or the most represented in the top of this index that we create that's trying to account for population size and GDP when we're looking at the just the raw numbers of money that are flowing into these different countries. And so Central Southern Asia is highly represented. India is at the top of our index. We've got Vietnam, Philippines, Indonesia, Pakistan. And we talk to people in each of those regions who tell us a little bit about why about how that deeply resonates with them, but also why they're seeing that, and tell us a little bit, you know, more stories of your average Joe crypto user in the country. The second, I think, big takeaway is that we can look at regional dominance, and right now North America is still a leader in crypto adoption around the world when you compare regions to each other. Now, of course, that doesn't take into consideration population, but it's if we had looked at this 2 years ago, it would have been Eastern Asia. And then Eastern Asia declined in dominance about 18 months ago around the mining ban. And then it was replaced by a surge in North America. We saw actually last year, Central Southern Asia started to really increase its dominance, and it's still currently number three behind North America and Western Europe. So we can see these dynamics playing out. And then from there, you can think about things like, how did regulation impact these dynamics? How did, you know, currency or economic or political issues impact these? So I'd say those are the top things. And then we've got other interesting countries like Ukraine is in the top of our index. We've got Brazil. Latin America has a lot of really interesting dynamics for, in Argentina in particular, people adopting crypto because of currency issues. So there's a lot in here.
So let's go. Let's start with LATAM. You know, let's start with the last item you mentioned. So, you know, when I was looking at data of your report, it's very interesting actually how much activity there is in Argentina. And obviously there's a lot of reasons behind this, from what's happening, from devaluation, the blue dólares they have, the different capital controls in place. And also what I found very interesting is the size of transactions. When you look at the type of transactions that take place and the size of transactions, are you guys surprised when you look at the Argentinian data? Is this something you expect, or was the data even surprising to you guys on that side?
I think the scale of it was in fact surprising. I would have expected Brazil to be the top market, but this, and I think it was last year, and it's not surprising that it's a big player. When we have interviews with people in Argentina, we rely heavily on interviews because it's really easy to understand if there's a transaction going to a scam address or to a ransomware address, what is happening there. But a transaction going to an exchange, it could be many different things. We don't know the intention behind the transaction. Is it a remittance payment? Is it an administrative payment? What is it? So we rely heavily on interviews. And in Argentina, everyone seems to be on the crypto train, or at least aware of that. Another interesting dynamic in Argentina is the prevalence. Almost 80% of all order book data is people going from the Argentinian peso into stablecoins, specifically Tether. Stablecoins are really popular in Argentina, whereas if you compare it to a country like Brazil, Brazil has a much higher altcoin and Bitcoin footprint. So there are, and so it doesn't really surprise me because of the currency issues that are faced in Argentina. And the other thing that we're getting more and more interested in doing is looking at the relationship between trading volume and currency devaluations. And we put those charts in the report so you can kind of see the relationship between a devaluing currency and increase in trading. Now, I have a lot of caveats to that, but I'll kind of pause there.
So look, I mean, it's very interesting as well. I mean, you're right. When I was looking at the data as well, I would have expected Brazil to be high up there. And I think it's interesting, the stablecoin element as well. I know, just having from other interviews we've done and other guests we've had on the show, how literally for a large segment or increasing growing segment of the population, stable coins are becoming basically how they're able to transact in international business, not only in Argentina, but other places like Turkey and elsewhere as well. I mean, that was a very interesting point. It was like, from the data that I saw from your report, Kim, what I found very interesting was sometimes over 50% of the transactions were in stable coins. I mean, Why do you think so? Is it because people are using it for day-to-day transactions, cross-border payments, or they want being able to be on a dollarized economy without hard dollar bills? Or is there something else to it?
I think first, it's in part that if we look at the share of all transaction activity happening across the blockchain, regardless of region, stablecoins is just steadily growing. If you want an up and to the right chart, look at the share of overall activity that is happening in stablecoins. That is growing. If you want to look at the number of active wallets that are holding stablecoin activity, that's another up and to the right chart. And it's hard to find an up and to the right chart in this bear market. And so we are experiencing people coming online and realizing that stablecoins offer this bridge to the US dollar. They offer a stable store of value. I think if I had to venture a guess as to why it's happening now, I'd say that there was a few years there where we weren't sure if these stablecoins, the popular ones, were going to be able to hold their value. Or is there a depegging incident that might happen? Do we really trust these coins? And I think that we've crossed over into a yes, we do, and yes, I'm familiar with it, and yes, I see the proof of reserves from Tether, and we really see all of this. Considering what happened last year, take this with a grain of salt, but trust in the stability of some of these stable coins, familiarity with them, and ease of access as well, more innovation in the ability for people to onboard. I think stablecoins were only offered in the past year or year and a half on Binance in some of these LATAM countries as well. So it's kind of, we're doing a lot of banking work to get these assets available too. And that's a whole other can of worms, like the amount of work that private exchanges and businesses have to do to set up a good user experience for people in countries around the world.
I mean, we're talking about exchanges. One data point that I find fascinating is if you look at markets like Brazil or Argentina, up to one third of transactions are happening on DeFi. I would have expected that actually as people are entering the crypto space, a lot of them would be, transacting peer-to-peer using brokerages or using centralized exchanges. And I was personally very surprised to see a DeFi usage and adoption being so high as up to one third. Why do you think this is the case? And what do you think could be driving this influx towards decentralized finance in LATAM, in particular Brazil and Argentina?
So I'm going to start with the caveats as to why we should, some considerations as you're viewing stats like that. A lot of activity and centralized exchanges happens on order books. So, and our data is only looking at on-chain trades. So funds going to exchange, centralized exchanges, or funds leaving centralized exchanges. And then all the trading happening on order books is a separate data set, which we include in, but it's not DeFi, every single trade is on the blockchain. You don't have that order book problem. So I would say that the data is biased downwards for centralized exchanges because it's missing some of that activity. That's one. And we can verify that by, if we look at the web traffic visits in Brazil, in particular to DeFi services versus CeFi services, I don't know the exact ratio, but it's something like 90% to 10%. Way more people are going on centralized exchanges in terms of visitor count. So there's more users in the centralized service space, and there's fewer power users in DeFi who are doing extremely large transactions, institutional level money, lending large amounts of money, seeing massive liquidations. So that is a smaller but high value space. Of course, you have your degens who are doing fewer, smaller transactions, but a lot of the transaction value is driven by these large transactions.
Interesting, actually. No, I think that the caveat you put on the centralized exchanges, I think it's a very important one. It's good that you guys are capturing data, but I can see when transactions are being netted off or other types of activities that exchanges do, or why it's not being how it's not being captured in the data. But on that point, I was looking at the data for Venezuela, for example, where according to your data, it's over 90%, 92% of transactions are happening on centralized exchanges. And maybe I'm naive, or maybe, again, I don't know. I've been to Venezuela a couple of times back in the day, but I found it's actually interesting. I would have expected the whole DeFi world to be higher in places like Venezuela in particular. Why is it the case? How come there's so much activity on the centralized space in Venezuela?
It's a really good question, and I'm not going to have a perfect answer to why DeFi has not taken off in Venezuela. Maybe there's a little bit of, it's a desperate situation and people, you find what is the most available. And some of these DeFi solutions still have a little bit of a more difficult on-ramp. It might be, crypto is really popular in Venezuela because of the circumstances that they're facing with hyperinflation. And so you have a lot more broad usage in Venezuela, and that broad usage is just people who are onboarding on centralized exchanges. It might be more intuitive, it might be easier, that just might be the only option for that people are aware of. I can only speculate really on that.
It's very interesting. Maybe if anybody of our audience is from Venezuela or that part of Latam, I'd be very interesting. It's a very interesting point of insight from your report that I found very, very interesting. So here we go. One of these mysteries of crypto, despite all the transparency we have, some questions remain.
Yeah. I will just say on that one point, I wish I could do a PhD dissertation on every single country in this report. It is so deeply unsatisfying that I don't get to dive into the dynamics of every country, and each one does warrant a completely different set of, you know, research. And so we can't answer all these questions, but I guess it's a call to action. People in the audience, you know, you can take one of these questions on and get to the bottom of it. It's a desirable area to research.
It's funny you mentioned this, Kim. I was mentioning this recently to an economics student who's about to do PhD, and exactly on the same point where the usage of stable coins, what I was telling him, that, you know, it would be very interesting to analyze the usage of stable coins and the speed of dollarization of certain economies. If you look at Turkey, if you look at countries like Argentina, Venezuela, and other places of the Middle East, Lebanon, a very good example, and what role stable coins and crypto plays there. I think it's a very interesting topic indeed. I'm sure there's somebody listening who may be interested in that. But obviously, for a lot of these countries you mentioned, Kim, there's obviously been a catalyst. In many cases, it was failed or, let's say, not appropriate monetary policy on that on behalf of that particular country. What was interesting, if I switched to another region of the report, what you guys refer as CSAO, the Central South Asia and Oceania. For example, I was looking at gaming, the impact that gaming has had in certain markets. For example, when I look at the Philippines, it was very interesting that compared to other jurisdictions, up to 20% of the activity in crypto was linked to gaming, you know. And I know there's been a lot of conversations around some of these Web3 games that were coming in the market, but do you believe this is a trend we can see in other markets where gaming really becomes a catalyst to the adoption of crypto with the mass market of certain regions of the world?
It was a really good observation that you talked about this catalyst, because I think there are, I guess, waves to adoption of any technology. And right now, what we've seen happen with cryptocurrency is we saw a wave of people onboarding because of the rapidly appreciating price. So people were investors at that point. You know, before that, you had the ICO kind of bull run. And right now, where we're kind of at is a place where I think that people need some sort of killer app or reason to get in if they haven't already. You know, and there has to be that kind of push to get another broad wave of adoption, or else you're just going to have people trickling in slowly over time, which is great too. But to get a real push and a wave, you need that killer app. And I think people are talking about what's the next killer app in North America that's going to bring on a new wave of investors beyond just Coinbase's vaults or lending. And in Central Southern Asia, we saw gaming in the Philippines, and it certainly could be an on-ramp in other places if it's done effectively. There was a real cultural moment with Axie Infinity that connected people. It really acted as a way to, for the first time ever, bring new people into crypto. We also have seen other kind of similar catalyzing events. One thing that stands out right now is we talked to some folks in Pakistan, yeah, who said a catalyzing event was a really prominent influencer who, it was well known to everyone in the region, kind of became a Bitcoin evangelist and talked about it all the time on their show. And they were talking about how they kind of acted as a catalyst to bring crypto to Pakistan. They forced a lot of conversations. So I think they're trying to, that's not a killer app, but that is a moment of something that acts to bring more people on. In India, we saw an NFT trading card, a cricket trading card that was really popular that brought on a lot of new users. So we're in a phase where I think to bring on a new user base, we are going to need more of those killer apps like gaming, and gaming is a great example.
Interesting. I mean, I think the influencer story in Pakistan, that's a very interesting one indeed. Because you're right. I think when you look at Pakistan, the data of crypto adoption is actually quite on the lower side, compared to what you would expect, especially compared to India, actually, Kim. By the way, which is I found very interesting, when you look at that part of the world, I'm pleasantly surprised to see India in a top position because, yes, I mean, we can debate all day what's the legal status of crypto, but I know, for example, the taxation of crypto assets is quite high in India. Were you surprised? What do you think is driving this adoption of crypto? Is it, like you said, some of these catalysts that we are seeing, or is it really more holistic usage of crypto and interests within the across the country?
I think India is particularly interesting because I think to some degree that this study covers a one-year period that ends in July of June of 2023. And so I think a lot of the taxation legislation was coming in towards the tail end of that. So a lot of the data is capturing what happened in India before some of those changes happened. But India, we tend to find each country has like one really interesting way that crypto is thriving. In Argentina, it's because of inflation and it's Tether. We talked about in Philippines, it's gaming. And there tends to be one real thing pulling people up. So in some places, it's the peer-to-peer marketplaces. India is strong across the board. It has strong DeFi. It has strong peer-to-peer. It has strong centralized exchanges. It has strong institutional. So it's not choosing one lane. It's really broadly represented across all of these metrics. And I think that when you talk to people, you do hear that in different conversations. It's easy to find the person who's really into decentralized finance and for financial purposes. It's really easy to find the everyday person who's just putting a portion of their income into ZebPay or something like that.
Absolutely. You know, Kim, I'm based now in Dubai, and I think there's a big chunk of the, let's say, I would call the overall wealth in Dubai that is linked to India, and definitely crypto is playing a big role of that. Even the projects we've seen in India over the last couple, 2-3 years as well, the level of the number of developers and activity. So absolutely very, very interesting on that side. But, you know, you mentioned obviously there was in certain countries, like, for example, Tether in parts of LATAM or Turkey or in parts of Africa as well. One piece of data that I found very interesting is that how adoption of Bitcoin is particularly strong in certain countries, especially Nigeria. I find it very interesting that, for example, Nigeria, but also sub-Saharan Africa, the adoption and usage of Bitcoin is actually highest in the world. I think many of the Bitcoin maxis who are in my audience are probably going to be happy to hear this. But what do you think is driving this? Is it really the fact that people want this alternative? Is it digital gold? Especially compared to stable coins in some of those markets?
We found in sub-Saharan Africa, so the stat is that of sub-Saharan Africa has the largest share of its overall activity as in Bitcoin. And that is really interesting. And it's by a lot if you compare it to some of the other countries. And Bitcoin is, I think there's a little bit of Bitcoin resonates. People recognize the name. It's popular. People talk about it all the time. There's advertisements everywhere. It's Bitcoin. Bitcoin seems to be king in sub-Saharan Africa. We do see a rise of stable coins, but if you look at the order book data, it's Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the front runner. And I think that's because people like Bitcoin the most. They understand it. It's popular. It's well, it's well established. People have been using it for years. It's been a slow, steady increase. And it's I think that just as much as it might be that it does offer kind of a digital gold component, I think there's kind of a cultural phenomenon of it's just a popular thing and people talk about it a lot.
Interesting. I think on your PhD comment, we can definitely do a PhD on the
definitely
in Nigeria. No, I think it's very interesting because the I would have expected, there's obviously a lot of initiatives going on right now in Nigeria from the INERA on the CBDC side to broader adoption of crypto in Africa. But I think that was a very interesting takeaway on the usage of Bitcoin. I think some of the listeners of my show know, I did an episode about 3-4 months ago where a lot of people scam, there's a lot of fake Henry Arslanians out there. And it's very interesting because when we work with actually Chainalysis has been a partner, has been helping me out as well in the process, as well as some of the other competitors to Chainalysis over the years and tracing the fraudsters who impersonate me, it's been very interesting that pretty much all roads lead to Nigeria. We had a lot of difficulties there with law enforcement, and these scammers are very active, of course, in moving along. So it's very interesting on the Bitcoin data point you're seeing there. And by the way, one other question, when it comes to adoption of crypto in Africa, right? It's very interesting how Nigeria is so popular on crypto, and really Nigeria has a leading role by a mile compared to other markets. First of all, why do you think Nigeria has become such a crypto hub? And second, what are the other parts of Africa that you guys are following that you think have some and the data is showing some catalyst activity on when it comes to the usage and adoption of crypto?
It probably is a long story to tell, in the sense that like what I was alluding to before, it can be really hard for private businesses, exchanges to set up in new countries. They have to put in a lot of effort. It's grassroots effort. They have to know local banks. They have to send people to a country. And so I'm thinking about a lot of the work that Binance did in Nigeria. They put in a lot of boots on the ground work to establish the infrastructure for this community. I mean, the demand was there, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get the infrastructure there so that it can achieve the level that it did today. And that's going to be a slow effort that takes many years. And we've seen it. Paxful was another company that put in a whole lot of work into building the infrastructure within Nigeria specifically. So you have that infrastructure component, and then that will allow people to kind of come online more and more. And so there's that component. And then there's also you might hear people say that it's just a very entrepreneurial, high population, things are busy, things are moving fast, a lot of commercial opportunities, plus some regulations that might make it a little bit tougher for your local merchant to get for example, engage in Forex. I think that there's like a pretty high hurdles for some of these local merchants to import, export using the traditional currencies. And so there's some of those incentives as well that are making cryptocurrency pretty popular. So all those things happening at once, but I couldn't speak to, and then when you talk about other countries, that's kind of spilling over into Ghana, and that's really Nigeria led in activity. So people from Nigeria moving to Ghana and bringing it there. And that speaks to the grassroots nature of what we're talking about. This crypto is not a top down. We bring crypto to you see it sometimes in El Salvador, but by and large, the most adoption that I see is a grassroots adoption. It happens over time. You build infrastructure, more and more people kind of come into the fold, and you see a steady growth over time. And so that's trickling over into Ghana. We see Morocco, which kind of has that corridor to Europe component of, there's people immigrating from Morocco to Europe. There's a corridor, there's a remittance corridor there. There's local groups of people that are trying to educate users on how to use cryptocurrency. Then you also have Kenya, which has been a prominent player as well for, a combination of those factors that were discussed. But again, PhD needs to be done.
Absolutely. We're almost running out of time, but I want to cover two more things, two regions as we talk about Africa, just go north to the Middle East. The data was very interesting when you saw obviously what's happening in Turkey, and also what's happening in Saudi Arabia. What you're seeing in Turkey, is it a similar phenomenon to what we're seeing in Argentina, where people are using stable coins for daily activities? And also you can touch also on what we're seeing activity, the rise in Saudi Arabia as well, which is very interesting. While there's no crypto regulations per se, there's such an increase in activity.
Turkey is just, I'm going to say, I guess, popping off with crypto. If you go on to CoinMarketCap right now, it's probably a top 5 traded asset, Bitcoin against the Turkish lira. It is heavily traded. There's a lot of crypto activity. It's the volumes. I mean, you usually see Bitcoin against USD, sometimes Bitcoin against the euro, but this is BTC/TRY, and it's way up there, and I'm guaranteeing you it will still be up there today. And this has to do with currency problems, as well as a lot of really pioneering BTC Turk, Paribu, local exchanges that are really only serving Turkish markets, are doing a lot to raise awareness around crypto. Usually we talked about Binance in Nigeria. That's not, I mean, Binance is popular in Turkey, but they have all of these homegrown exchanges that are really marketing and targeting local people to bring them on as well. And I do think it's most likely to do with the currency and what's happening there with devaluations. Saudi Arabia is one of only five or six markets that saw growth year on year. It's because there's a bear market. Everything's down across the board. But with our methodology, we can see a few kind of spotlight areas in Saudi Arabia. I think Vietnam was one of them as well that saw year-on-year growth. And Saudi Arabia's got a big institutional market. It's a prior Middle East is last year was the fastest growing region in the country. And that's UAE where you are. That's Saudi Arabia. And a lot of that is because they've got these established markets that are kind of in UAE, you see regulation really trying to make it clear how to get people involved in crypto and making it kind of a priority there.
Very, very interesting. I think it's interesting also in some of the previous reports you guys discussed also how the rise of regulatory clarity in places like the UAE, for example, has really catalyzed crypto activity. And it's very, very interesting on that point. Last point, Kim, we are really running out of time, but I just want to touch one thing is about Asia and especially China. I think what some interesting data points in your report was like, I think when I was reading it, it was like places like Hong Kong and Taiwan, over 50% of activity in the report is DeFi. But I think what you explained before justifies that a lot of the CeFi data is probably is not captured properly in that sense. But I found it very interesting that when we look at the data for China, around 75% of the activity is coming from centralized exchanges. How is that possible in a country where crypto exchanges are technically banned, that we're still having such a big percentage of the trading activity coming on centralized exchanges?
It's really about that people are still accessing these cryptocurrency sites. They're still putting money into crypto. And I think it speaks to one thing that I think is an under-discussed area in the traditional markets and also in crypto is the role of informal gray markets and how just big they are. So this is stuff that's not reported or that happens, you know, between friends or between businesses. It's kind of informal markets that are huge and they're harder to quantify. And so I think we've been circling around large informal markets in China, people still carrying out activity, commercial activity with cryptocurrency in spite of the ban. You know, we have a narrative at Chainalysis that says bans don't work. They worked a little bit in Eastern Asia. We can see the decline in the total amount of activity that's happening in Eastern Asia. But by and large, the people are still participating and they're finding ways to get around some of these regulations.
Interesting. Huh? I mean, it's very interesting that people are still getting around. I mean, I think it's one of the open secrets that people from China are still trading crypto, but that the data is so high. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
On how it's taking place. I think there's another probably PhD on how people will always find a way, to go through. One last question that you need to, for as overall, when you guys are analyzing this data and, you know, how do you guys making sure that you're capturing the data properly? So for example, if somebody's in China using a VPN, how are you guys able to look through that data to ensure that the data, the country that these people are saying they are in is actually accurate?
It's a good question. This methodology does not account for VPNs. So there is a level of error there. We've submitted our findings to exchanges to see how similar they are. I think that the feedback is they're directionally correct, but they're a little bit overinflated in small countries. And the reason for that is that we have the Binance problem in the sense that There's Binance's used by every country around the world, or other exchanges that are used by every country around the world. And then there's $700 million transfers that happen that are at institutional level. And then that kind of brings up everyone's average when you use our methodology. So VPNs are a problem. We tend to notice that VPNs are more used in criminal activity. So if people have an active reason to hide their activity, then they will. And in fact, some peer-to-peer marketplaces prevent you from using a VPN while you're using their platform. But yeah, it is definitely a caveat. And we're going to continue to work with exchanges to submit our data to get, you know, feedback on how accurate it is and how we can improve the methodology. But there's other caveats as well to our data that we detail in the report.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Yeah, I think so. For anybody interested in these reports, I think it's a great place to find out, actually at least get an overview of what's happening in the world when it comes to crypto usage and activity. And I think, like you said, a lot of these country-specific ones, there could be whole research done on that. Kim, it was great having you. As usual, we're going to finish quickly with a fire round of questions. I have a quick round of questions. I need one or two word answers, and we're gonna jump through these. Are you ready?
Ready.
Perfect. Let's go. Kim, I know you love the outdoors. What's your favorite place to go hike or dive?
Okay, I like to go diving in Mexico. But really anywhere. And I like to go hiking in the Grand and in the Pacific Northwest. I think I've only done it once though, and I want to go more.
There you go. What's exciting you the most about the future of crypto?
I get really excited thinking about when this bear market's going to end. And when we're going to have the next wave of people coming online because of those killer apps that we discussed. Yeah, I think just like looking for the markets to turn.
You guys do a lot of research on various countries. What is the one country you find the most fascinating from a crypto perspective?
I would say Vietnam is extremely interesting. It's a priority market for us. It's led in adoption. Ukraine is also extremely interesting. Cryptocurrency in conflict zones is something that is also interesting to see as well. We saw some interesting dynamics in Afghanistan after the Taliban took over and invaded. So
that's another PhD topic just on that as well. So here we go. Yeah. Based on all your research and you've been in the space for a while, if you're betting women, who do you think is Satoshi? Is a man a woman, and where is he or she from?
Oh, I just saw, I think Nick Carter recently released this tweet that was like saying that it was from the NSA, and there was like a reference in the paper that there was a name of someone who's really close to Satoshi Nakamoto. And, you know, he was like, this seems convincing, I think. And so I was kind of, you know, I was kind of, this does seem convincing. I think before I was thinking Halfini, but yeah. I'm definitely going to sit with this NSA.
Definitely more exciting. I've been on the same page. I also really believe it's potentially Halfini, but then this NSA paper is quite interesting, actually caught my attention as well. Next question, Sam Bankman-Fried gives you a call. What's the one piece of advice you have for SBF?
Oh gosh. Give me all like tell me how I could prevent this from happening again in the future with data. Like tell me every red flag from a data perspective, because I'm interested in creating alerts for people so that this type of activity can be stopped. So give me a playbook into how I can build to prevent you from doing that again.
Absolutely. Last one, CZ gives you a call. He's having a lot of headaches these days. What's the one piece of advice you have for CZ?
I would just say, I think I would just say they're very transparent there. I love the thought leadership they do. Maybe like, you know, publishing as much data as possible is always going to be the right move, I think. So, you know, publish more and also, you know, collaborate with us on thought leadership. It will be fun. Let's go to Nigeria together and interview people.
Here we go. And Kim, the last question, the traditional question on the Future of Money podcast. Kim, if you could have lunch or dinner with one person dead or alive, who would that be?
Okay, right now, it's going to have to be, I'm rereading the book 100 Years of Solitude. So Gabriel Martin, I'm going to butcher his name, he's completely captured my heart right now and would definitely want to get lunch with him.
Here we go. That's the first time I hear that, that's for sure. Yeah. Kim, was great to have you on board. This is Kim Grauer, the Director of Research at Chainalysis. Kim, if people want to get in touch with you or read more about your work or that of your firm, where can they find that?
Okay, you can go to our website, chainalysis.com, and we've got our blog available. That's where all of our research is found. Also, if you really just Google like crypto and geography, you'll probably get linked to some research that we've done as well.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed this episode as much. I enjoyed reading and hearing about some of these insights. Thank you very much, everybody. If you want to keep on top, make sure to check out my YouTube page as well, which is a lot of educational content. And a lot of these content is actually accessible there as well. And if you like the show, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating. It really helps more people discover the show. Thank you very much, everybody. And see you all soon for another episode of the Future of Money podcast.